97.9 FM, 1360 AM, along with Southern Season, bring you Side Dish with your host, Liz Cooper. Listen over the next 30 minutes as Liz Cooper brings the Chapel Hill Carrboro community culinary insights from around the world. From local farming to nationally known book authors, Liz shares an array of culinary tips. Brought to you by Southern Season, Chapel Hill's Landmark Gourmet Emporium. Landmark Gourmet Emporium, great for local gifts and delicious favorites. Visit them online at southernseason.com. And now, here's your host, Liz Cooper, with Side Dish on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, WCHL.
Welcome to Side Dish. This is Liz Cooper, your host, and today our guest is Noah Rothbaum, author of The Art of American Whiskey. Welcome, Noah.
Thanks for having me on.
So can you give us a little bit of background for those that may not know who you are, how you got started in the whiskey and spirits business and into writing, and just a little bit about where you came from?
Sure. I've been writing about spirits and cocktails now for about 15 years or so. My first book called The Business of Spirits, how savvy marketers, innovative entrepreneurs, and so long ago, I can't even remember the subtitle. Innovative Distillers and Entrepreneurs Change How We Drink. And that came out in 2007, so that's about 8 years ago.
Great.
And then for about 5 years, I was the editor-in-chief of a site called Liquor.com. And then I left to finish up my book, the new one, The Art of American Whiskey, which just came out a few weeks ago.
Great. So what spurred on this interest in alcohol, besides just, drinking and that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, it's a wonderful topic to write about because there's always stuff that's happening and right. There are all types of innovations and the people who, whether they're bartenders or distillers or, are really passionate about what they do. And, it makes it fun to write about. Back in college, I did an internship at Food and Wine magazine, and that really, at the time, it was a pretty small movement. Dale DeGroff, who's the father of the rebirth of the cocktail,
was
still behind the bar. Like, I remember going to see him at Blackbird, which was where he was right after the Rainbow Room. So, it was amazing to be introduced to it so early on. And
yes.
To meet these people when it was still such a small movement. And
yeah, he's an interesting cat. I met him a few years ago. Very interesting.
He's the best. I mean, he's a consummate professional. And he takes the hospitality, aspect of bartending as seriously as the drink making. It's just the whole experience he's concerned about. So if you get a chance,
yes,
I'd highly recommend getting a cocktail made by Dale one day. You can.
Yeah, it's definitely the elevated experience, that's for sure. Did you have any experience bartending in college? Did you ever think this is sort of the path that you were going to be? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. It's like, people are always curious, like, oh, like, were your parents big drinkers? Like, not really, that most of the bottles in there, in the pantry, pretty dusty, pull them out for special occasions, but it wasn't like they were mixing up, martinis every day at 5 o'clock. And I think that, to be honest, speaks to kind of the larger trend of where we are in America, and kind of, for so long we sort of forgot how to drink, and we've lost so much of our cocktails and spirits history and knowledge, really, starting with Prohibition and then, both world wars, and, really through not that long ago, so much of this sort of
pushed
away,
It's a great segue to the Art of American Whiskey, talking about where, this whole our sort of cocktail background and our spirits background comes from as far as the United States goes. So let's talk a little bit about the book. First of all, for those that don't have it, it's a beautiful book. It's got great pictures, which I guess speaks volumes about me, but I love a book with lots of pictures. but
we're kind of wanted. I thought, like, you know, a lot of books about cocktails and spirits, you know, the first thing that we all do is we go right to that middle section of photos.
Yes.
And I was like, why don't I just make a whole book where there are plenty of photos?
It's great because it really sort of guides you through our cocktail history, if you will, you know, starting with the 1800s, 1900s, onto Prohibition and so on, all the way into our current time. And it's great that each chapter also has the sort of drinks of the time. So can you just give us a little idea of sort of what, you know, kind of, I don't know how I want to say that, how you, what inspired you for this book? Let's go there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd wanted to write another book, and I'd want to, you know, a real love for whiskey and particularly American whiskey. And I was down in Kentucky a couple of years ago, and I saw a display of old American whiskey bottles and some labels down at Heaven Hill Bourbon Heritage Center. It sort of was like one of the first, you know, sort of started the bourbon tour almost, that is, you know, Maker's Mark probably. And I was down at the Bourbon Heritage Center, and I saw this display, and I thought, wow, like, these are amazing. Like, you know, who knew that, you know, they were so interesting and intricate. And then, you know, I walked a few more feet, and I was like, you know, I was like, kind of like, that would make a great book. And I was like, like, I could write that book. You know, like,
excellent, yeah.
It just sort of came to me, and it was really, you know, kind of fun to, you know, look for all of these different, label art and bottle, you know, bottle design, and all the photos and old advertisements, and sort of, you know, wanted to tell the story of American whiskey through kind of a visual manner. And, you know, the label art and the bottle design really, you know, say a lot about, you know, both what we're drinking, but also what was going on, you know, in the greater society.
Right.
It's even more interesting.
It's, I think it's interesting, especially, you know, as you leaf through these incredible old labels that are here. And you have one that looks like, I mean, it's the Rip Van Winkle that it looks like it was never actually used.
Right.
But this really intricate, like all different fonts and all this huge amounts of information on this label. I thought it was really very, very cool.
It's sort of hard to pick. Like, people are like, what's your favorite one? It's like, wow, like, there's so many cool ones. And, you know, even, you know, there's so many different and intricate, you know,
right.
labels that were created. You know, I was able to find some really cool stuff, like, from Heaven Hill, like a number of artist renderings, you know, that were actually paintings that were done, you know, before, you know, obviously before we had computers, things were done, and people would, you know, design the labels, they would make a mock-up, and these were mock-ups that they had left over probably, you know, I can't remember exactly when they're from, but about the 40s or so, and those, you know, they weren't even sure if they were reused, but those kinds of, you know, unearthing those types of things that haven't been seen, you know.
Yeah, it's...
God knows how long.
Were you able to find these? I mean, did you find these in museums, or are these things that some of the distilleries sort of had in their archives, or were you able to locate them?
It was sort of it was a combination of you know, looking in archives, you know, mm-hmm. different state ones, or you know, and then also you know, working with a lot of the different distilleries and mm-hmm. some of the distillers themselves. Getting them to look in old file cabinets and
right.
God knows where.
I'm going to cut you off really quickly here because I've let the time slip past very quickly. But we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll come back after this break. You're listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM. Welcome back to Side Dish. I am Liz Cooper, your host, and we're speaking with Noah Rothbaum, author of The Art of American Whiskey. So, Noah, we were just kind of covering where you found some of these incredible labels. I mean, you know, some of them are definitely, you can tell, a sign of the times, whether they're sort of deco-ish or they're, you know, I mean, some of them even have this oddly religious look to them.
Yeah, or I mean, it's funny. It's like a lot of the different movements, you know, Art Nouveau, you know, Art Deco.
Right.
Kind of folksy, you know, and it's even, I mean, it starts in sort of the early times before America, you know, was even a country. through, you know, sort of talked a little bit about, you know, American whiskey then, and, you know, George Washington, and after he left office, he was not only our first president, but he was, you know, owned, you know, one of the largest rye distilleries.
I think people would be shocked to know that he had a distillery. The book opens up with, you know, a picture of his ledger for the distillery.
Right, and that's actually the ledger. I mean, it's amazing that Mount Vernon has that.
It is incredible. It really is.
And it was this Scottish plantation manager who came to him with the idea of, like, you know what, like, we could use some of this grain. And Washington's very progressive, like, in terms of his agriculture, and he was a very successful businessman, you know, getting his grains sold all around the world, and it was very cool. And then, but really, even then, like at that time, you know, whiskey wasn't sold in bottles. Like there were no labels. You know, really, right. Almost to the turn of the century, if you wanted to drink, you'd go to a bar and you'd have a glass of whiskey, or if you wanted to take some home, you'd go to a bar, a grocery store, and they would have a big, you know, barrel of whiskey, and you'd
right.
fill up a flask or a jug or a decanter.
Yeah, but it's like the growler filling station.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And really, like, up until, you know, 1870 is the first American whiskey that comes in a bottle, which is Old Forester. So the book, uh-huh. you know, that's, you know, sort of those images are from that time. And Old Forester wasn't meant to be sold to consumers. It was targeted to doctors. And
yeah.
Not because doctors are...
That's, yeah, it's,
know,
interesting.
Where drinkers,
it's this sort of medicinal purpose.
Exactly, and they wanted to know that it was sort of unadulterated, because at the time, you know, people would cut the whiskey, you know, with all types of stuff, and you never were exactly sure what was in it. So,
right.
you know, that was the first bottled whiskey, because and bottles were so expensive at the time. That's why they weren't using them. Nothing came in a bottle, really. That's sort of why pharmacies would make soda, like, you know, at the counter, because...
Yeah.
Bottles were too expensive. So around the turn of the century, somebody comes out with, you know, a cheap...
It's the mother of invention, huh?
Exactly.
It's crazy.
And then from there on, it's kind of amazing to see that even those early labels, a lot of them refer to themselves as sort of like old, or like hyping, you know, this is the old-timey whiskey, even though, like,
right,
we're talking
right.
about 115 years ago. They were still trying to, like, just as distillers today, kind of emphasize the fact that they use traditional recipes or their lineage, or, you know, their family, you know, is making it for, you know, generations and generations.
Yeah.
Even back in the time, they were kind of hyping this, kind of like, oh, we make whiskey the traditional manner. Like, don't worry, like, you know, even though it's in a bottle. Like,
yeah, I love how they have, like, for medicinal use, or they have these sort of endorsements from chemists, or, you know.
Oh, yeah, those are the ones for Prohibition, the
right.
so-called medicinal whiskeys, which, you know,
yeah.
when I started out, I kind of thought those bottles would look maybe like rubbing alcohol, you know what I mean? Like
sort of, exactly, yeah.
You know, like, you go to a pharmacy today, and it's like the stuff, you know, the prescription stuff, like, I don't, you know, it comes in a sort of nondescript bottle. But these obviously, you know, during Prohibition, while it was illegal to make or, you know, transport or sell alcohol, the government did give out a number of licenses to distillers to bottle medicinal whiskey that,
yeah,
you know, consumers.
Yeah, it's interesting. You referenced that during the Prohibition, the Volstead Act, there were six distillers? And because I think people, you know, are under the impression... You know, there was nothing, and I know as from wine as well, you know, for if you were good friends with the Catholic Church, you were able to hang on and continue to make wine as a sacrament.
According to the Prohibition book by Daniel Olgeron, there was like a spike in the number of people who became like rabbis and priests
exactly.
during Prohibition in order to make, you know, religious wine. But
yeah.
There was so much medicinal whiskey sold through pharmacies.
Yeah.
That in fact, and I never knew this before, but in my research for the book, that they had to declare a distiller's holiday to allow them to make more whiskey for medicinal use, because they had run through so much. Like,
yeah, it's. I was shocked.
Crazy.
On one of these things, you reference the amount of prescriptions issued in Nevada as opposed to the population,
oh, right.
like 10,000 prescriptions for.
Something amazing. And, like, and one of the great photos is that one of the Four Roses, which obviously you can still grade whiskey and you can get today. But There's one from a pharmacy, I think in Sports, Nevada, that, and it's a bottle of Four Roses, and it literally has a pharmacy label on
it. Yeah, it's the, from 1924, I'm looking right at it. It's crazy.
Telling the, you know, the quote-unquote patient how they should be, you know, taking their medicine, which is pretty hilarious.
Yes, it's 2 ounces to be mixed with hot water.
Right. It's like a hot toddy. Like,
exactly.
But I assume they had a cold. I don't know what that was a cure all for. But it would definitely be no problem taking that medication.
Yes, exactly. Especially if it's Four Roses. It's delicious. It's an interesting book, and it's as you kind of go through, do you have any, I know lots, I talk to bartenders all the time, and you know, you have people that they are a particular cocktail that they really enjoy, and with the resurgence of these sort of pre and post prohibition cocktails, is there one that you think is more desirous for you, or one that you enjoy more? I know that's kind of a loaded question. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
your favorite child.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it was cool. I mean, it's cool to sort of dig in and to sort of find out when people were drinking certain American whiskey cocktails. I definitely ran them all by David Weingrich, who's sort of our leading cocktail historian. And he signed off or made suggestions on which eras they belonged in. So it was kind of cool to see what people were drinking and sort of the lineage of where these cocktails, you know, sort of, you know, when they were, you know, popular, you know, during the summer months. You know, it's so warm, obviously. I'm in New York, so much of the country is hot and humid. You know, people often don't think that whiskey is kind of a summer drink, but
right.
In fact, it's so good in cold, refreshing drinks. You know, from, you know, obviously May is kind of Mint Julep month with the Kentucky Derby, but,
right.
You know, Bourbon Ricky, which is such a simple drink where it's, you know, a squeeze of half a lime and
right.
You know, a couple of ounces of your favorite American whiskey, and then, you know, bourbon, and then you fill it up with club soda. I mean, it's a delicious drink. So, you know, then, you know, there are things like a Presbyterian, which is, you know, your favorite American whiskey, and then it's filled up with half, you know, club soda, half ginger beer, which makes it nice, or ginger ale. It's a little bit sweeter for a delicious and refreshing summery drink.
Fantastic. We've got to cut to a commercial break here. You're listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, brought to you by Southern Season, and we will be right back with Noah Rothbaum. Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Liz Cooper, your host, and I'm here with Noah Rothbaum, author of The Art of American Whiskey. So, Noah, we've kind of gone through the book, and it's definitely, hopefully people will go out there and buy it. It's a great book. We want to let them know where they can buy it. It's a Penguin Random House. I'm assuming Amazon.
Yeah.
Amazon
Southern Season. Has it, you know, in your local bookstore, sure. Barnes & Noble. You know,
fantastic.
There was, you know, part of Random House, which should be available all over.
And do you have a website that people can sort of
stalk you? Sure. I mean, my website is liquorintelligence.com, which sort of gives you a little bit about, more about me, sort of what I'm up to, and events coming up.
So. Excellent. So, speaking of events coming up, if people want to hear you speak meet you for a cocktail, you've got the Tales of the Cocktail coming up in New Orleans, correct?
Exactly. Tales of the Cocktail is actually next week, so I'll be there. It starts on Wednesday the 15th, actually. We'll be doing a couple of book signings during Tales of the Cocktail, one on Wednesday afternoon, one on Thursday afternoon. I'm also moderating a seminar called How to Go Broke, Opening a Bar, which is Thursday morning. So,
that's probably going to be a well-attended seminar, I would think.
I hope so, yeah. At this point, it's sold out, but, you know, the way that Tales is, often there are a lot of last-minute seats available, since it's hard to get up for those early seminars.
Yeah,
so it's a corollary to I did one last year called How to Go Broke, Opening a Distillery. So hopefully this is kind of a series of different seminars over the next couple of years for Tales.
Fantastic. That's great. Well, so if you want to go see Noah, you can catch him at Tales of the Cocktail. Otherwise, check out his website, liquorintelligence.com, or go out and get the book, Art of American Whiskey. So, Noah, when I wrap up every show, we always have sort of, well, it's what I like to call a hot seat question. It's really not all that hot seat question-y, but usually I ask people, if you're invited to a dinner party and you could sit between any two people of your choosing, alive or dead or famous and not famous, who would they be and why?
Wow, that is a good question. I thought you were going to ask something else. So I'm relieved that you usually people ask, like, what's your favorite whiskey? And
yeah.
like tell us now. I'm like, oh, I can't tell you. It's a good question. I mean, I guess some of them would have to be, some of the early, distillers.
Yeah.
Somebody like, Yeats Taylor, was like a pioneer really for the industry. And even before, like, people were using, kind of labels and bottles, like, they're still selling casks of whiskey. Like, he put, like, shiny brass hoops around his barrels to make sure that people, knew that it was his. And it was just so influential. So somebody like him, I think, would be awesome. Interesting to sit next to Dr. Jerry Thomas, sort of the first celebrity bartender who wrote the first, first cocktail cookbook back in the 1860s.
Oh, that would be a pretty interesting combination of conversation between the two, one of the first distillers and first celebrity bartenders.
it would be pretty interesting to hear what they would have to say. I think it would be interesting to see what they would say about our modern rebirth of the cocktail.
Yeah, the modern mixologist, if you will.
Yeah, and the sort of new golden age of American whiskey, I think they would be quite interested to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, this has been great talking to you, and I certainly appreciate you being on the show. And we'll look forward to talking to you again.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Fantastic. You've been listening to Side Dish, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL, brought to you by Southern Season.